At the end of the day, I must confess, my conclusion of being a shepherd was, on the one hand, fascinating. I mean, here's a guy who gets to spend all this time outdoors in nature with these wonderful, sometimes maybe obstinate sheep, but certainly fascinating, certainly unique, and maybe the need to be eccentric to be able to do it. For you have to love the outdoors, and certainly you have to love solitude, because sheep don't say much to you. Now, I wonder if that's the picture that Jesus is describing here in John chapter 10, when he is telling us and telling his disciples that he is the good shepherd. Well, one of the big differences, of course, is that Jesus was part of a culture where it wasn't a unique kind of a job, but it was much more common. And in that culture, a lot of people would have maybe known somebody who was a shepherd, or maybe there were even shepherds right there. They would have known that this job was far from nice and fancy-free and just wandering through the open air, but it would have been tiring. It certainly wasn't for the half-hearted, but it was for the manly men, and they certainly would have faced quite a few dangers. Now, on top of that, Jesus was also part of a culture, in the Jewish culture certainly, where this idea of the shepherd had been used as imagery, and it had a long history. So again, for Jesus to be speaking about him being a good shepherd would have conjured up all these thoughts of God describing himself as a shepherd. Maybe Psalm 23, just as we've been singing it, comes to mind, where God says, I am the good shepherd, I am the shepherd. Or in Isaiah 40, in relation to his people, God cares and leads his people. But it was also an image that was used to describe God's appointed leaders, in the sense that these leaders were meant to both lead and to care for the people. And so Jesus very much utilizes this image to explain things about himself. But he adds one particular word, doesn't he? He doesn't just say, I am a shepherd, or even I am the shepherd, but he says here, I am the good shepherd. Now, very simply put, that implies that there are also bad shepherds or false shepherds. And Jesus refers to them in his own explanation as being the thieves and the robbers, or as the Message puts it, the sheep hustlers. Just the people that climb over the wall and are not there to care for the sheep, but are there to hurt the sheep or to steal the sheep and to take them for their own advantage. They don't care, they only care about themselves, and in their self-centeredness, they don't care if the sheep get hurt or not. If you read the wider context, maybe Jesus is even referring here to the Pharisees. And I wonder if they would have gotten the kind of subtle hint to their role. But if you read chapter 9, and hopefully if you've been following the daily readings, there's an amazing story of a man born blind who Jesus heals. And Jesus heals him on the Sabbath. Of course, on the Sabbath. And the Pharisees, who were the very serious, the ones that knew the Bible inside out and loved rules and were probably the super Christians of their day, they struggled. Maybe less so with Jesus healing somebody born blind, but that he'd done it on the Sabbath. So actually, it's a very funny story. They call this young man and they speak to him once, speak to him twice. There's maybe a very well-known verse that is used in Amazing Grace where the man just almost gets annoyed at the Pharisees and says, you know what? One thing I know. I was blind, but now I see. And this is what this Jesus has done for me. But very interestingly, the ultimate reaction of the Pharisees is found in chapter 9, verse 34, where they reply to him, you were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us? And they throw him out. Here are the Pharisees, part of the scribes, part of those who were meant to care for the people. And what do? They disciple him. No, they throw him out. Who are you to lecture us? And isn't that exactly how the thieves and the robbers are being described by Jesus? Just like the false shepherds that are described in Ezekiel chapter 34. where God says this. He says, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. Woe to the shepherds of Israel, who only take care of themselves. Should not shepherds take care of the flock? You eat the curds and clothe yourselves with the wool and slaughter the choice animals, but you do not care for the flock. You have not strengthened the weak or healed the sick or bound up the injured. You have not brought back the strays or searched for the lost. You have ruled them harshly and brutally. And so Jesus says there are false and even bad, even evil shepherds out there, but they're out there to hurt us. However, Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. Isn't that good news? And good isn't in the sense of being nice, you know? Oh, that was good. That was nice. It's much stronger than that. It might have the notion of noble, worthy. Jesus is a worthy shepherd, a noble shepherd. It speaks of strength. But why? Why is Jesus the good shepherd compared to the other shepherds? Well, there's four reasons. First of all, Jesus explains that he's the good shepherd, for he knows his sheep. Verse 14. He says, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know my own. Just to come back to our lovely friend Thomas, one thing I hadn't realized was that actually sheep have a lot more character than you expect. Now, I don't think he'd name them all. We try naming 200, 250 sheep. But he did explain and kind of point out a couple of them who had, some of them had kind of leadership characteristics. And he said, you know, if I can get that sheep to get into that field, I know the rest will follow. And there was two, he said, were the oldest sheep in his flock. And he said, they kind of look out for each other. They're almost like sisters. And then he said, there's one, notice it, it's limping a little bit. It's straying behind. And so he was explaining how actually he knew his sheep. And he could see things that I had never noticed, never seen before. And so Jesus says, in the same way, I know my sheep. And this word to know isn't so much about knowledge. I know things about my sheep, but it's very much a word that indicates a relationship. And that is that to be known is to be loved. And what is known is of value and important. But isn't it great to be known? And I'm not talking about fame, but just simply that someone knows you. I remember when we just moved here to Edinburgh, still thinking that Edinburgh is a massive place. It's a city, of course. I remember us ending up in John Lewis before all the construction and deconstruction work. And we'd wandered into where you get a nice cup of coffee. And all of a sudden, we heard somebody say our name. And it was Margaret Burnett. I don't know if you remember this, Margaret. But it was brilliant. We'd never imagined that in a place unfamiliar to us, there was somebody there who'd remembered us and known our name, and we felt more at home. And I think we all long for that, don't we? If we come here to church and somebody hasn't remembered your name, I mean, that feels weird and awkward, doesn't it? But if somebody does and speaks to you by name, you feel loved and cared for. And so Jesus knows each one of us. But secondly, Jesus is also the good shepherd, for he doesn't just know his sheep, but he also calls his sheep by name. What do you think of that? Again, this word, calling, isn't so much of, you know, making a phone call or something. Literally, it means sound. So it could very much, you know, mean that the calling is actually a calling out, and a calling out with a clear and a loud voice. Jesus is crying out the names of his sheep. It's the picture I would certainly have when Jesus shares the parable of the shepherd who leaves behind his 99 looking for the one. And the looking for the one is very much described as not giving up until he's found that one lost sheep. But how do you think he would have gone out? How would a shepherd go out to look and find his sheep? He goes calling. I don't know what he calls. Sheepy, sheepy. But he would have been shouting so that maybe the sheep who got lost would respond and he would hear and find his sheep. And so Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd because I am calling, crying out people's names individually by name. I mean, isn't it unbelievable to think that God is a God who pursues each one of us through Jesus? And maybe today is the day that you are hearing your name being called. Christian, Mary, Michael, Stuart, Jenny, Catherine, Stephen, fill in your own name. And Jesus says, come and follow me, because I am the good shepherd. Now, thirdly, Jesus is the good shepherd because when he calls us, he doesn't just know us, he doesn't just call us, but when he calls us, his purpose is to lead us. Now, this is maybe an interesting thing because today we don't necessarily associate shepherds with leaders, do we? You know, shepherds are for the gentle, caring kind. But actually, in the Bible, a shepherd was very much the person in authority. The shepherd was the leader. So some of the big names in the Old Testament, like Moses and David, well, David was actually, when he grew up, a shepherd, but it was also described when he was the king. He was a shepherd. And even one that was used as the enemy of the people of God, King Cyrus, is described as God's shepherd, doing the work of God in powerful and strong leadership. And so when today the likes of Thomas actually drives the sheep from behind, maybe using these sheepdog to help him, in those days a shepherd would have led. And that is why Jesus can say in verse 3 and 4 in chapter 10, the watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he has brought them out, all his own, he goes on ahead of them. And his sheep follow him because they know his voice. Again, the little word used here is the Greek word exago. Now, I don't think there's necessarily a link with Exodus, but it does have a little bit of the thought of the word Exodus in there. And so the idea of Jesus leading us out is very much that same idea of how the people of God in the Old Testament were led out of Egypt, but not just for the sake of being led out, they were then led on towards the promised land. And so today, Jesus says, I'm still the good shepherd. My voice calls. And if people listen, my voice will lead. And it is for us to follow. Now let me just pause here for a moment and just simply ask the question, are we starting to see just how important this aspect of the person of Jesus is? I mean, Jesus very clearly sets out a choice, doesn't he? There's a choice for us, and the choice is that we must realize that there is false shepherds and that there is a good shepherd. And that the question for us is, in our life, who do we listen to? Now, I know we struggle with the whole idea in this picture that we might be sheep, that we're meant to, you know, we're kind of obstinate ourselves, aren't we? We're independent, and we like to go our own way and lead ourselves, but ultimately, we human beings are made, I believe, to be led. And in many ways, we are being led. Sometimes subtly by friends, sometimes by other people we look up to, but we're led. But what kind of shepherd is that person that we're listening to in our life? Is that a shepherd that truly cares about you? Is that someone who's really got the best in mind for you? Or is it the Lord Jesus himself who came, who knows, who calls you, and who longs to lead you? Now, if you're still not convinced that there are actually some that are that there is one that is better than the others, and just how important it is to listen to this good shepherd, there's one other reason why Jesus is also truly the ultimate good shepherd above everyone else, and that is the fact that the good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. Verse 11, Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd. And the good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. Now, just to give us a picture and an understanding of this, is that first, this is contrasted with the hireling. Do we have an idea of what a hireling is? So I remember once working for a greengrocer in Holland. And one time I was left to look after the store. Now I know that by looking after the store, if a fire had broken out, I would have simply ran. It wasn't my store, was it? I was hired to serve. And of course, I cared about serving the customers well, but ultimately, I didn't have the same care as the owner. And so actually, it's very funny, but totally human. It's not bad or evil, but you know, the hireling is described here that when danger comes, he runs. And so would we. Not worth it. I care about my skin. There's probably more sheep out there for me to look after. There's always another job. And so the hireling, being described as not owning the sheep, isn't worried about the sheep. It's not going to be his loss, but Jesus, who on the other hand is the owner of all things, and if it were possible, wants nothing to be lost and no one to be lost. When the wolf came, ready to snatch Jesus, ready to snatch, Jesus actually didn't flee. We find that Jesus, the good shepherd, instead fought the enemy and won. Now, the other contrast that is here isn't just the hireling, but actually all the other shepherds. Because a shepherd owning his own sheep would have certainly been willing to risk. Or maybe even, you know, be willing to give their lives, but hopefully will never actually have to do it. But Jesus said, I am the good shepherd, both because I'm not like a hireling, but because I am a shepherd and the sheep are mine, but also because I didn't just risk my life, I actually gave my life. Hence, John, later on in chapter 15, tells us there's no greater love than that someone lays down his life for his friends. And we find in all the Gospels, but I'm just using the words that Mark records in chapter 15, that on the ninth hour, Jesus cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? And he breathed his last. And when this happened, the curtain of the temple torn in two, and the centurion who was right there says, truly this has to be the Son of God. That is Jesus, the good shepherd. Not just willing to risk, but actually having done exactly that, giving his life for us. And Jesus' death here doesn't serve as a nice moral lesson, you know, one of those high standards we should all live up to. No, it is because the sheep were in mortal danger. There was a necessity here. And Jesus lost his life for us in our defense so that by his death we can be saved. You'll have maybe heard on the news this past week that Billy Graham died. Now, I didn't hear the radio show, but some people were saying that actually Jeremy Vine used quite a bit of his time on Radio 2 this past week, and that people were phoning in explaining how Jesus had made a difference in their lives. Now, I've never been to Billy Graham rally. I've never heard him speak live, but I know that some people didn't think that he was maybe all that amazing and that there was a real simplicity in his message. I know he said himself that his main text was always John 3:16, for God so loved the world. And yet how many of the rallies did not end with people, hundreds, thousands, streaming forward? Why? I don't think it was necessarily because they heard Billy Graham speak, but I believe because they heard the Good Shepherd speak their name into their heart, and all they could do, however scary it was, to come forward and say, Jesus, thank you for laying down your life so that I can live. And people, that's available to us today. It's also how we come to the fact that Jesus actually uses two pictures, and I've wrestled with how the two can be the same. He says, I'm the good shepherd, but I'm also the gate, he says in verse 7. One thing that actually strikes me, and here's a picture of what the gate would have looked like. Here's kind of one of those places where the sheep would have been, and as you notice, there's just one opening. And it makes sense, doesn't it? if you were a shepherd, you wouldn't want to have too many openings because you would have to guard all the openings. So there's one opening, one gate possible. But unfortunately, I know many people stumble over this exclusivity of Jesus' claim. You know, saying, don't all religions ultimately point to the same God? Or don't all roads actually lead to heaven? And maybe our natural reaction, even as Christians, might be, well, if only, because then all people would be saved, and wouldn't that be great? But people, it's not possible. It's not possible because of the inconsistency between all the other faiths and Christianity. Because all the other faiths will tell you that you can try to do your best and do just about enough to get either to heaven or to get a good enough karma to be reincarnated in the next life as someone better, probably, hopefully, Dutch. But it's the Christian faith, which actually has the good news, where Jesus says, you know what? There will never be anything enough, quantity or quality-wise, that you can bring that's going to tell me, yes, I'm going to, you've earned the right to come to heaven and be with me. But Jesus says, you know, I have done all that is necessary for you to come through me as the gate by trusting in what I've done on the cross. And I will give you life. Life in all its fullness. And people, this is good news. It's both good news because there's absolutely no shortcuts. There's no halfways about it. Jesus has always been very clear. But how good it is to not have to depend on our own achievements, because we will never have any certainty or any security. And for the rest of our lives, right unto the point of our death, we'll be like, have I lived good enough? Jesus takes that right away and says, I have done it all for you. Simply believe and simply accept this gift, this offer that I give you from the Good Shepherd. And so the strange thing is that it is actually possible for Jesus both to be the gate because of his sacrifice on the cross, but because his death wasn't the end. And in verse 18, he actually even explains in saying, no one takes my life from me, but I lay it down on my own accord. But I also have authority to lay it down. But I also have authority to take it up again. And so Jesus, through his death, but then through his resurrection, can also be the good shepherd to lead us to pasture. Jesus' death was not an end in itself. He actually died in order to rise and to proceed to his ultimate glorification. It was never an accident, his death, but neither was his resurrection. It was all part of the Father's plan. And so through Jesus, and by acknowledging and trusting in his death and his resurrection, we are saved. Not just known, not just called, but then led out by Jesus, our good shepherd. Now here's the interesting thing, and let me just finish on this thought. You know those words in verse 10, where Jesus explains that the thief comes in only to steal and kill, but I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. In some translations are translated as life abundantly. You know what's interesting? That is almost an in word, isn't it? We're all seeking life abundantly. I'm struck how often I open the paper and how, you know, everything has to be an adventure. The in thing now is, if you don't have a lot of money, you go for mini adventures. If you have a lot of money, you go for big adventures. So we're looking for adventure. We're looking for that abundant life. But Jesus offers it right here. The only problem is, the only way for us to enjoy that abundant life that Jesus offers is actually through our abandoned life. But sadly, many of us continue to listen to the Pharisees, to the scribes, or anyone else who maybe looks like a good shepherd, but actually ultimately don't care for us, not in the way that Jesus Christ has. So people today, if you hear his voice, listen. Get rid of all the other noise that distracts us, all the other sounds that maybe call us with their advice, but hear Jesus calling your name. The door is open. And for those who have already gone through, is it a great reminder that Jesus says, I am the good shepherd who leads us out and leads us on and leads us until we're going to spend eternity with him. We have nothing to fear, only to worship. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much Thank you so much for Jesus. Lord Jesus, some people believe or feel that Jesus is forced on them. But that's not the description we get here. You pursue us, but you also simply call us and leaving the choice to us. You're not like a sheepdog who scares us into a place where we don't want to be, but you lovingly speak our name, telling us that you know us, that you know what we need, even if we don't realize it ourselves, and offers to lead us out to true life, abundant life. Lord, my prayer this morning is that if there's anyone here who has not yet, for whatever reason, entrusted themselves to you and gone through that door, that today will be the day. But I also pray, Lord, that anyone who has already gone through that door, help us to never forget that, Lord Jesus, you continue to be our good shepherd, leading and guiding us. Help us to never stop listening to you, knowing that you are truly our good shepherd.